You're listening to McBee Care Threads, a podcast where leaders across the healthcare industry can learn from each other. We'll discuss stories and explore strategies to help providers deliver value-based care and hear your peers share their best practices for success. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to the Care Threads podcast. I'm Heather Gerard, a clinical consulting manager here at McBee. I specialize in inpatient rehabilitation services as part of our education, training, and consultation team with Uniform Data System for Medical Rehabilitation, better known across the industry as UDSMR. So today we're excited to feature the Duke Rehabilitation Institute located at Duke Regional Hospital, which is part of the Duke University Health System in Durham, North Carolina. Joining me are Brittany Hill, Nursing Program Manager, Jennifer Anderson, Assistant Manager of Rehab Services for Inpatient Physical Therapy, and Angie Webb, Assistant Manager of Rehab Services for Occupational Therapy. They'll share how their inpatient rehabilitation program achieved some impressive improvements in key areas, including reducing length of stay, lowering readmissions to acute care, and enhancing patient-centered quality outcomes. So here's how they turn challenges into wins, and let's start our discussion. So Brittany, Jennifer, and Angie, thanks for spending time with us today. Let's start by having you introduce yourselves. Tell us more about Duke Rehab Institute.
Good afternoon. My name is Brittany, and I've worked with Duke University Health System for 21 years and 14 years at Duke Rehab Institute. I'm a certified rehabilitation nurse and currently serve as the nursing program manager and prospective payment systems coordinator.
Hi there. My name's Jenny Anderson. I've worked with Duke Rehab Institute since 1996. I was a staff physical therapist for 20 years and then transitioned into management in 2016. My heart's always been with inpatient rehab and have had a really wonderful career with Duke and excited to share our experience today.
And hello, I'm Angie Webb. I have worked with Duke Rehab for 32 years and have been a manager for the past 15. I also cover acute care, which gives me a special place to see the before and after of our patients that we'll talk about today. We as a whole are part of the leadership team for Duke Rehab Institute. It is a CARF-accredited 23-bed inpatient rehab facility, which provides care to adults with diagnoses such as stroke, debilitation, and spinal cord injury. For those that don't know, CARF, C-A-R-F, is an accreditation that we receive every 3 years. It is the Commission on Accreditation for Rehab Facilities, and it blends beautifully what we will talk about today with quality and care for our patients.
So let's start with the big one, the length of stay. It's such an important metric in inpatient rehab. So Brittany, what made you zero in on length of stay as a key data point? And for those who might be listening and not as familiar with rehab metrics, why does this measure matter for inpatient rehab settings?
Length of stay is a priority for health systems across the nation, including inpatient rehabilitation facilities, as we focus on the delivery of intensive therapies with the goal of returning patients to the community. Managing length of stay improves patient outcomes, patient satisfaction, and operational efficiency while lowering the cost for our patients and risk for adverse events. We zeroed in on the length of stay as a key metric at Duke Rehab because we found it to be an opportunity for improvement by looking at our metrics, and we found we were not in line with the region and the nation for other rehab facilities. This provided us with the opportunity to explore ways to improve our current processes and collaborate with our team members, not only to reduce length of stay, but continue to meet the same goals and expectations of our program. After implementing several new key processes, we were able to decrease our average length of stay by 1.5 days when compared to the previous year.
Wow. So reducing overall length of stay is not an easy feat. So what strategies or changes helped you make that kind of progress, and were there any surprises along the way?
You can say that again. Length of stay is definitely a hot topic in the healthcare world these days. There were several strategies we utilized to prioritize our reduction in length of stay, which we're excited to share with you today. We were able to collaborate with our leadership team from both the rehab unit as well as our executive leadership team to redefine what appropriate rehabilitations look like. Initially, we reviewed our admissions, and we thought that our patient population was significantly different than other rehab facilities. However, we learned that the rehab patient population continues to become increasingly complex. This required us to learn alternative ways to ensure accessibility to care for this population and support them in their goal of returning to the community setting. Our first course of action was to redefine our admission criteria. Instead of focusing on reasons why we couldn't admit a patient, we began to change our thinking process to how we can provide care for this patient. For example, with the advancements in technology, we are now able to offer patients virtual follow-up visits with their providers instead of having to wait for scheduled appointments to be completed. We also created a stoplight method of criteria to ensure patients came at the most appropriate times in their recovery period in order to facilitate their ability to actively participate in therapies and their care. If patients were in the green column, then we knew we could proceed with an admission. If a patient fell into the yellow column, then we knew we needed to pause and seek additional clarification. And if a patient fell into the red column, we knew that they were not appropriate at that time, but continued to follow the patient for progress. For example, if the patient had an unclear discharge disposition, or we weren't sure if they could tolerate the intensity of our program, we would place them in the yellow column and seek clarification from the acute care therapist. However, if a patient was only able to follow commands 25% or less of the time, we knew this was not the appropriate time for them to come to rehab, and we would continue following with them, placing them in the red column. Following this stoplight method to determine when we bring patients ultimately improve their ability to actively participate in rehab, make significant functional gains, which offered them the opportunity to return to the community setting. And this helped us improve our return to community setting scores, which is currently at 86%.
Right. And once we received approval to move forward with our new admission criteria and processes, we then disseminated this information to our acute care therapists and case managers to make sure we received referrals that aligned with our criteria. We were able to send out emails to provide written information to the teams, but we were also able to provide in-services to the acute care therapy, case manager, and medical staff throughout the Duke Health System, which we thought would be beneficial as they could hear the information directly from us. We also opened up the opportunity for the therapy staff to feel free to contact us with questions about why do they qualify or not qualify, so that we could have an open discussion. This proved to be an amazing way to educate the staff on what types of patients were appropriate admissions. But it also gave us a chance to know more of the acute care staff and case managers to be able to have discussions with them in a space that was respected for learning. Additionally, we collaborated with acute care case management and attended weekly long length of stay meetings to proactively address issues or challenges that may impact a patient's length of stay when they came to inpatient rehab. In this way, we were able to ensure that some fixable issues were completed before the patient was admitted to our rehab. It also gave us an avenue to go back to when discharge situations fell through. The long length of stay team was already familiar with the patient. This was maybe as simple as being sure insurance issues were cleared up, patients were signed up for unfunded benefits, or that the Medicaid process was started in an appropriate way.
We also had a chance to re-educate our rehab therapy staff on the best way to determine appropriate length of stay based on the calculated date from the system, as well as self-care and mobility scores on admission. We began using the rehab functional ability goals to judge how our goals were met according to the standards of CMS. This let us see how close or far off we were from the national standards when we set our own goals for a rehab stay. We've encouraged more and more discussion through our rehab team conference, not just about length of stay that was suggested by the team, but rather what we calculated had spit out by the system. The team then learned to justify the needs of the patients based on the overall scores instead of just asking for one more week. The staff knew they had to be able to actually have the patient increase their functional outcomes in order to justify the longer stay. This has proven to be a good avenue for our team conference discussions, as well as the chats in between meetings.
So I love that shift of focus to considering what the outcome of more time will be, because we always think our patients will do better if we work with them longer. But one of the key elements of the inpatient rehab team is its interdisciplinary team. So how did collaboration across disciplines help shorten these patient stays? And do you have any examples of how teamwork really made a difference?
Sure. So our collaborative intradisciplinary approach to patient care is evident. Throughout all steps of a patient's admission to our inpatient rehab facility, it begins with our nurse liaisons visiting frontline case managers and potential patients in person to review general expectations of our program and also the expected goals to support patients in returning to the community. We were able to establish trusting relationships with patients and their families from day one. Well, actually, it's before day one. This also gave the nurse liaisons the opportunity to review and proactively address potential barriers to discharge, such as the need to install a ramp at home, which is often a barrier to discharge. Ultimately, the face-to-face interactions and open communication created better working relationships within the acute care case managers and gave a different perspective of the patient and their ability to handle the intensity of an inpatient acute rehab. We all know patients can look very different in person versus in the medical record.
Yeah, and another thing was the PTOT leadership, which is Angie and myself. We were often included in communication, whether it's through chats or email, to discuss the functional status of patients before they were admitted so that we can optimize their time here in rehab. We've had the opportunity to talk directly to the acute care staff to ask questions about precautions, ability to tolerate inpatient rehab, and the potential to meet functional goals based on their knowledge of the patient while working with them in acute care. It's also followed the acute care staff to connect with us to ask questions or clarification of why or why not the patient's able to come to rehab. We've also been able to offer suggestions to them on an individual basis to help with discharge planning when the patient cannot come to rehab. Because no matter how wonderful and sweet the patient might be, they do have to be able to tolerate the rehab intensity for 15 hours a week. So when this isn't possible, we're able to offer other suggestions like other discharge destinations. One example I have how this relationship has grown is recently there was a patient that was referred to us but had a very low functional level and complex medical condition. The acute care therapists were recommending acute rehab, but they had been co-treating the entire time the patient had been on their service. There really wasn't any functional progress that had been documented, and therefore our medical director declined the admission. The acute care staff at the other facility reached out to one of my therapists advocating for this patient, stating they strongly felt that they had good potential but needed acute rehab. My therapist added me to the chat, and we had a really good discussion on what was needed to show this patient could tolerate and do well in the acute rehab setting. This included splitting OT-PT sessions, documenting any functional progress, no matter how small, like improving sitting balance at the edge of bed or rolling with less assist. The acute care therapist did these things and we were reconsulted. And after another review, we submitted for insurance authorization and the patient was approved to come to acute rehab. The patient was a complex but absolutely appropriate admission at this point, but would have missed the opportunity without the reaching out and communication that we had between the two groups.
That's great. So in order to empower patients to hit the ground running, you didn't just look internally, you reached out to those acute care teams as well. So can you give some examples of how you brought those physicians and clinicians into your process? And what impact do you feel that that collaboration had on your outcomes?
Yes, definitely. The communication with the providers improved our outcomes significantly. We were able to collaborate with both the acute care providers to ensure the patients were able to utilize their time at the inpatient rehab efficiently. For example, we would reschedule appointments until they were discharged from rehab, or we would have different diagnostic procedures actually completed before they came to rehab. We collaborated with the acute care case managers to be sure that funding sources were accurate and that financial aid documents were initiated also. And as we mentioned before, we've had continual chats with the acute care medical team, therapy team, and case managers to ensure that all questions were answered before the patient actually came to rehab. This let us get as many roadblocks out of the way as possible before the patient actually was admitted. This let us know what we needed to plan on before the patient got here. For example, they would need assistance with SNF placement, skilled nursing facilities, even after they came to rehab, or that they would need a ramp after rehab. We also had the opportunity to attend specialty meetings, such as the Duke Health System Stroke Task Force, and meet with the individual service lines, such as the neurology, orthopedic, and surgical teams. This let the team members working with the patients hear directly from us what our rehab patients needed to accomplish.
That's great. And so the next outcome that you were able to impact was reducing the number of patients who returned to acute. So what is that metric looking at, Brittany? And what can you tell our listeners who might be less familiar with inpatient rehab about why the reducing this data point is so important?
Sure. The return to acute care outcome measure refers to patients that are readmitted to the acute care hospital setting from rehab. It is often due to complications or unresolved medical issues. The return to acute care measure is important to review as it can highlight opportunities for improvement within the admission process, medical readiness, and the patient's ability to handle this level of intensity. It shows us things that we may have missed on the pre-admission screening or in therapy notes, or if we brought them even too fast when they were not medically ready yet. When patients return to the acute care, it can increase risk of mortality, increase overall hospital stays, and increase cost to the patients. Some of the most common reasons why patients return to the acute care are infections, cardiac complications, and overall functional decline with no apparent medical reason. They return for more testing and procedures just to follow up. This metric also impacts the healthcare facility's readmission rate, which can negatively impact our performance measures. In general, hospitals look at 30-day readmissions rates as a scorecard for their success. As inpatient rehab is a separate admission from the acute care hospital, a discharge back to acute is again a readmission.
So you saw that collaboration with the acute care teams was also essential here. So how did you partner with that team to reduce the possibility of patients returning to acute care? Were there any strategies that really stood out?
The biggest strategy that stood out was that we began MMI, or morbidity, mortality, and improvement rounds. This process was a partnership with the acute care medical team and is critical to the success for any patient admitted to an inpatient rehab facility. One of the primary requirements for inpatient rehabilitation admission is medical management needs. Without that, they could easily go to a lesser level of care. As we saw more discharges back to acute care or medical complications while they were here, we began to ask why. What else could we do, and was the patient ready to come to rehab? So, we established a rehabilitation-specific MMI committee to review and learn from opportunities to improve care while managing the needs of an increasingly complex patient population. This committee consisted of our leadership team, nursing, therapy, hospital leadership, case management, and our admissions group. We also consulted other hospital team members, such as internal medicine providers, clinical nurse specialists, and even infection prevention specialists, just to name a few. Including these consulting team members in our learning process was critical to providing actionable recommendations for improvement. We also brought in our frontline rehab staff that worked with the specific patient that we were discussing. This helped to improve clarity for case details and assist with getting to the root cause. This allowed us the chance to look back after the dust had settled to see what we could have done different, what did we do right, and how could we have assisted the patient differently or acknowledged that we followed all appropriate steps to care for the patient and did everything right. It also offered a time of reflection on how this affected the team as a whole, given these patients are often the sickest of the sick. Through the work of this committee, we were able to create a Duke Rehab Institute to Acute Care Process Map. This process map provides the medical and nursing teams with a clear framework for escalating care needs for a patient, decompensating, and ensuring that we are able to move the patient to the most appropriate area for the care that they need. The development of this process map was pivotal to the improvement of this measure. Without the help of our executive leadership team and consulting partners, we would not have been successful. It is always important for us to remember to lean on our support systems when we need it most, and I couldn't think of a more important time. Our work on this measure is definitely one that we are very proud of. We were able to see a 50% decrease in the number of patients returning to the acute care when we compared to the current year to the previous year. This speaks volumes to the work that this team has done to ensure we provide the very best care to our patients.
Those are impressive results, reducing the number of patients returning unplanned to the acute care hospital by half. So that's almost essentially like increasing the number of patients with successful rehab stays by 50%. So the type of patients and the timing of admissions can really make or break whether the patient succeeds in rehab. So what changes did you make to streamline and standardize that admissions process so that patients were less likely to bounce back to acute care? And what lessons did you learn along the way?
Well, there are always more lessons to learn, and we have found quite a few. As you heard, we started by redefining the admission criteria and using a stoplight method and applying standard work. An important lesson I learned along the way was how crucial it was to be a supportive part of a supportive interdisciplinary team. As we have mentioned, not only our rehab team, but the hospital leadership and the medical teams were invaluable in how we were able to get the right patient to rehab at the right time. We were able to collaborate to create a standard work process for reviewing the complex cases to ensure potential issues or challenges were addressed prior to admitting the patient. Our standard work emphasized the need to have input not only from the medical and nursing team, but also speech, physical, and occupational therapies. This is especially true when admitting patients with the goal of lessening burden of care for the family when the patient has suffered a very unfortunate event. Gaining insight into potential challenges into the rehab process affords the team the ability to create an individualized plan of care and set appropriate goals. There are more eyes on the chart for our very complex patients, and we have the opportunity to look at all aspects of their care. The patient may be progressing very quickly medically, but they still have care needs based on mobility and ADLs that the caregiver just cannot handle at the time of discharge. We are able to set appropriate goals for the patient coming to rehab, even though they may not have been exactly where the acute care team started. For example, we have very complex post-surgical and cancer patients. The care team's goal may have been for them to get stronger and to move to the next step of care. But when the rehab team looks at them, we will see a longer process than expected with the possibility of more surgeries and treatments. The rehab team can maximize their independence, assist with DME attainment, and allow their families to care for them at home instead of at a facility.
It's truly great work. So finally, let's turn to patient-centered quality outcomes. So you've done some impressive work to make sure that your outcomes data truly reflects the progress that patients achieve during their stay at Duke Rehab. And you've told me that you've used the LEAD framework as part of this improvement effort. So for those who aren't familiar, what is LEAD with a D, since I'll admit I was only familiar with lean with an N, and how did that approach help you strengthen your outcomes data, and what are some examples of how it worked in practice?
Yes, LEAD is a framework for loving your work, engagement, asking for help, and delivering results. It reflects our commitment to a patient-centered care delivery model that focuses on the patient's attainment of self-care and mobility goals, overall functional mobility, and returning to the community setting. This framework also uses indicators of efficiency and effectiveness of our program, which aligns with the expectations of CMS, or Medicare. Our best example of LEAD framework is the overall improvement in our outcomes for our patients, which Jen is going to share with you.
Right. So first, we partnered with frontline staff. So starting with loving our work and engagement, we were able to engage with our frontline staff that do the day-to-day work to determine the processes that we actually use. They were able to give input of where they saw the issues from a firsthand view. We literally had meetings about our outcome scores and what the team thought were the issues at hand. They had a different insight working directly with the patients that had been not being scored in the most efficient way, and they had opinions on how to best fix these problems. We then engaged with the team in redesigning the standard work processes and documentation. So, for example, like who's scoring and documenting on the PAC QI. And speaking of meetings, we then had more meetings with staff as they assisted in redesigning the standard work processes and helped to change our documentation to facilitate improvements. So one example of this was that occupational therapy, rather than nursing, would begin to score some of the items that correlated more to occupational therapy's goals for ADLs and toileting. This improved efficiency of the scoring, it improved the reliability of the scores we were giving, and it made them easier to track via functional goals that therapy would write in their notes.
And after all of that, we provided education and learning resources to our staff so that they could accurately document. We had redesigned our standard work processes. We were able to provide that education and provide resources to support the accurate documentation. And it helped us reflect the work that we do every day. We were able to pause, sit, and listen to identify any actionable next steps to capture the work being done. We thought we knew what the issues were, but we needed to double check before moving forward. Then we had to ask for help. We expanded our task force to include staff super users, and we completed an internal audit to identify problem areas and new learning needs. Literally, we looked at outcome measures for functional mobility and ADLs, comparing our written PT and OT goals to the numbers that we were seeing. We were trying to see if they both met or where the variations were. We requested a consultation for training of the staff, and they performed chart reviews based on the actual cases and issues as well. Then we began training with our super users, and it was completed during a live Zoom over 4 hours. Other staff were provided with the same information via recorded Zoom as well as updated resources. We made changes to our flow sheet data rows in which disciplines were responsible for which domains of the PAC-QI, going back to OT completing toileting and shower instead of nursing. We also completed routine testing and updated learning tools that would be shared each year with our staff. This was done via online training modules, handouts, and books we made for proper scoring. We also requested the Mortality, Morbidity, and Improvement Committee consult to look at not only how our data information was, but how we could best care for our patients. And lastly, we were able to deliver the results with an overall increase in our percentile ranking of 24%. We were able to share this information and successes with our frontline staff, literally sharing cake.
So, to summarize, we learned that loving your work meant that we reconnected with staff with a purpose and showed them the importance of improving our scores. We reviewed cases where scores were significantly different than what we were expecting via the rehab functional ability goals. We were able to engage with our team by knowing that the improvement is a team effort. And then we asked for help. We were able to consult with our resources for additional education and assistance to improve our appropriate scoring practices. We had all staff complete the required training, 4 hours, either via Zoom or the recording, and had a delivery results of 100% of nursing and therapy staff passing their re-credentialing exam on the first try. But what you really want to take away from this discussion is the impact it had on the people that matter most, our patients. This work is a sign of our commitment to adapting to improve care and is reflected in the overall 24% increase in our performance as an inpatient rehab facility. I couldn't be more proud to say that I work with an amazing group of dedicated team members and work for a health system that has always put the patients first.
And I am so grateful that we're able to help you share your successes, both for your accomplishments as a team and for your patients' achievement. So Brittany, Jennifer, and Angie, thank you for taking the time to join me and share your insights and your experiences with our listeners today. We hope that these strategies will inspire other teams to drive meaningful improvements in patient care. So thanks again. And a big thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. Be sure to check out our upcoming or even some of the previous conversations on Care Threads that will help you deliver exceptional patient care. Thank you all.
At McBee, we understand the challenges providers face across the healthcare landscape. For more than 45 years, we've been a part of the evolution of the healthcare industry. Our strategic advisory solutions span the home health, hospice, health system, and senior living care continuums, creating improved clinical, financial, and operational outcomes. Our expertise is guaranteed. Our solutions empower. Visit us today at McBeeAssociates.com. Thank you for listening to McBee Care Threads. To ensure you never miss an episode, please subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you use Apple Podcasts, we'd love for you to give us a quick rating for the show. Just tap the number of stars that you think the podcast deserves. For more information on the topics discussed today, visit our website at McBeeAssociates.com. Until next time.